This conference
So,
will now be recorded.
all of the members of the committee are present and visible, except for Mike Long, who has identified himself orally. And we recognize your voice, Mike, so it's validated.
Thank you.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is the June 10th. Meeting of the CAA's Human Resources and Governance Committee. First order of business is to consider the minutes of the last meeting on December 4th, 2019, which have been distributed to you. Does anyone have any changes or additions to propose to the minutes? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes as drafted.
So moved.
Second? Anybody?
I'll second.
Very good. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. That moves us to the discussion items. We have two of them, and there will be a short executive session as well once we cover the two discussion items. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Kevin and Sharon. For item A, discussion of employee compensation and benefits.
Okay, Bob, before I do that, I know you've kind of gone through the committee members for the sake of the minutes. Just want to know, is there anybody public that wishes to identify themselves? Okay.
I don't know what, is it caller 01? Do we know who that is?
That's a good question. It's and it looks like it's known. It's not muted.
I can come up with the discussion items if you'd like, Bob.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. As you know, typically every whether
Kevin, you're cutting in and out.
Could mute yourself and you need to say something because that's where we're picking up background noise.
Yeah, let's all mute ourselves.
Okay. All right. So as I was saying, every June we typically get together to talk about employee salary ranges and employee compensation increases. As you know, or you may be aware, on the state level, there's been a number of conversations whether or not the classified employee will receive raises this year. There has been a point to the rate could be deferred. As of now, we have not heard that. Successful in that push, and it does appear that those raises to state employee classified employees know the vast majority of our employees are represented by those unions. So whatever the state decides would carry through to our employees as well. Okay. So the question becomes if those raises are going through for the classified employees, do we move forward with the raises for our unclassified employees? If you look at what was put into the budget, we had to naturally budget the salary increases for the classified employees. When you consider what's considered their annual cost of living, as well as step increases, that equates to about a 6.7% increase. When the budget was put together, as we've done in past years, we've carried a similar increase for the unclassified employees. We budgeted about a 6.5% increase. Now, we never typically give out 6.5% to all employees. We typically determine a standard compensation increase, and then we look individual by individual to see if any adjustment needs to be made in the in the context of where they stand in their range. So this year, it would be my recommendation that if the state moves forward with the raises, we grant the same percentage increase that's being talked about on the state level, which is 3.5%. So I just wanted to open that up for conversation to see if there were any feelings one way or the other as to the direction we're going to go on this. Bob, you're going to have to unmute yourself.
Bob, if you go to right by your name, yeah, there you go.
I'm good. Thank you. I was having a little problem. Kevin, would you clarify, please, the 3.5% versus the 6.5% that's in the budget?
Yes.
So you're saying 3.5% would be the standard level that you would work off of on a case-by-case basis? Or are you saying something different?
Essentially, if folks' performance is good, they would get the 3.5%. If there's performance issues, they would get something less than 3.5% or nothing. But what I'm saying is, in some cases, we have folks that, depending on where they were brought into the organization, sometimes end up very low within their salary range. In some cases, we've had employees that, based on promotions and whatnot, they end up below their salary range. So we typically utilize those additional funds to make those adjustments if necessary. We typically never utilize the full amount that's budgeted. And as I said, this year it's budgeted at 6.5%. On the union side, why that budgeted increase is at that 6.7%, they would be getting a 3.5% cost of living rate. But they're also entitled to step ranges if they're not at the top of their classification, right? Their pay range. And that's what makes up the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Those increases are driven by the collective bargaining agreement. So there is no judgment whether or not they get a step increase, right? So you're either entitled to it or you're not. But, you know, Mike Shea and his staff annually go through what it is that we're going to have to pay to meet all of the obligations of that collective bargaining agreement. That's how we get to the 6.7% increase on that side. Okay, just to, you know, in round numbers, talking about the unclassified, as I said, there was a 6.5% budget was put in. That equates to $339,000. If we gave the 3.5% raise, out of that $339,000, I believe we would use roughly $183,000
of it. Okay. Do we have other discussion or questions?
Well, I think it's a crazy system that we're caught in, but I think we're caught in it, and I don't think we have any choice. We're not big enough to affect it one way or another. And if we go beyond that, we're going to just give the organized bargaining unit more fodder to go after a higher number and say they got this, they got that. You know, I don't see we have any choice. I think we're just caught in a trap.
Yeah, I think we've adopted the philosophy, or we've utilized the philosophy in the past, that if the unionized employees are going to get an increase, that the management or unclassified employees would also get an increase. So, you know, if for some reason the state does not grant the unionized employees an increase, which, as I said, right now it appears it's going to go through, but if it didn't, then the recommendation would be that we not grant the increase to our unclassified employees as well.
This may not be possible, but my recommendation would be that we work to resolve any inequities in the system. If certain individuals are below where in fairness, they should be, or legally, they should be in a different category or deserve a pay raise, then we should do that. But I am considering the drop in the airport income, I recommend that we announce to everybody there'll be no pay raise and let the unions take us to court. Look at, there's half the state is unemployed or partially unemployed. And with all due respect to government employees and state employees, and most of them are good people, you know, I had to furlough half my staff here. I'm only one of thousands of other companies that have had to do the same thing. What justification do we have to offer pay raises to everyone else because they have a contract? Well, you know, circumstances are demanding that everything be looked at. And maybe we'd lose. Maybe we can't do what I'm suggesting, but my suggestion is that we start at that point.
Well, I think the issue we have with that, Tony, is in the enabling legislation that exists for the CAA, that's out of our control. We, for collective bargaining purposes, the state represents us, right? And this is a challenge we've had all along. It's something that, you know, I pointed out that at some point I think does have to change. I don't know how the CAA can be responsible for its own bottom line if you still have the state making decisions for the organization. But unfortunately, right now, that's the way the enabling legislation is written, that the Office of Policy Management through the Department of Administrative Services and Labor Relations represents our employees, not the organization. So we are bound by what the state does.
We are the state. Now, I don't mean to sound belligerent here, and that's not my intent. But how can we justify paying state employees? And I know that's out of your control, Kevin, and I know this has been an issue you've worked hard on to try and change over the last number of years. But how can we justify paying additional increases in salaries when the airport income is down dramatically and 2/3 of the people who foot the bill are either unemployed or underemployed? I think it's an opportunity to make a valid point. And maybe someone at the state level will take a look at it and say, well, wait a minute. The CAA has, you know, a good point here. I'm just throwing out my, you know, I'm only one person, but I'm telling you what my gut reaction to all of this is.
Paul, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I don't know if you have any legal perspective on any of that.
I absolutely don't. I'm probably trying to push water up a hill here, but somehow. Anyway, you know what I'm coming from.
I think the issue that we would have, and it's obviously different for the unclassified employees who have no contract, so that's a decision the authority could make. Unfortunately, despite efforts since the inception of the authority, our unionized employees are all part of the bargaining unit that is state employees, the DOT bargaining units. And so there really is no control. I don't think we could even not pay them and let us sue them. I think that it's going to go through the process and those raises are going to go through if the state grants them. That's just the system that we're in. So I don't even believe that we would be in a position to say we understand the contract. We're making a point by not paying them, because the raises are going to go through. They're through the core system, and we couldn't really stop that if we wanted to.
So who was speaking?
That's what I was referring.
That was Paul.
That's what I was referring to, was the trap.
Right.
But I guess the question I have from what you said, Paul, is you make it sound like the pay actually goes from state itself to the employees and not through a CAA check that we cut. Is that actually the case?
My would be better explained, but.
You're breaking up, Paul.
It's all tied in.
Yeah.
What's called the core system. Our payroll here is processed through the state. We input the data, but it is processed through the state. And that's another requirement that we have, because our employees are required to be part of the state retirements. So for record keeping purposes, it's all centralized through the state.
I'm not sure that makes any difference, Bob, because the contract is the contract. By statute, we are bound by the terms of the contract negotiated for us on our behalf by others. That's the trap that I was sort of referring to. We don't have any choice with that. We're bound by that contract. Then we get into the situation of that Tony refers to. Yeah, we got a whole bunch of people who are subject to that contract that we have to pay anyway, but we do have a chunk of employees who are not a part of that contract. And what do we do with them? If the others are getting the contractual raise, we find ourselves in the position of needing to give them the same raise in order to maintain the parity with the organized group, if you will. It goes around and around and around. It's a very neat trap that we're in the middle of. Is the way I look at it. I don't think there's any we can do about it.
And Bob, I'll just weigh in when it's my turn. So just let me know when you're ready.
Thanks, Karen. I'm just going to make one comment and then throw it to you. I think building on what's been said so far, just trying to get our arms around how things really work. The governor is dealing with the entire universe of employees who come under the state system, including ours. And he, according to press reports, has been attempting to get the agreement of the unions to accept some kind of limitation. If he were successful, that would, of course, apply to our unionized employees. So to follow your thought pattern, Tony, which I think, philosophically, I would be very sympathetic to, really has us throwing a monkey wrench in the gears of an entire state entity, which the governor is doing his best to manage. And that concerns me. It's not that we're answerable to the governor specifically as an organization, but it just seems to me like it's not the right thing for us to do to complicate that whole process. Karen, would you pick up from there?
Yeah, I feel like in terms of the union unionized employees, it's not. I agree. It's just not whether we agree with it or disagree with the fact that they're getting a wage increase during this pandemic is not something that is in our hands to make a decision around. I think the key decision today is whether or not we decide to move forward with raises for employees within the CAA who are not unionized. From that standpoint, my feeling is, I'm hearing you, Tony, on what you're saying, that these are very difficult times, that there's a high unemployment rate. There are people who are not getting wage increases. I was on a call earlier. I will say within the organization I'm in, there are not nominal wage increases, but there will be a nominal wage increase. The conversation, other individuals who are on this call were indicating within their organizations, there are nominal wage increases. So there are not, it is not outside of what is also happening. I think that it would be from a morale standpoint and just a best practice. I think it would be, to me, I'm not sure that I would feel comfortable if we were to offer raises, not offer raises or something similar to the unionized employees to the non-unionized, because it just creates then all sorts of issues, right? In terms of not just around the premise of the wage, but then It could create feelings and work practices that are not helpful to the organization. So, Kevin, I just want to reiterate some understanding. Do we know what the mandated wage increase for the unionized employees is in this upcoming fiscal year?
I believe it is 3.5%.
Okay.
So it would be essentially a 3.5% across the board increase, and then individuals have their own step increases beyond that.
And so is it, so we could decide potentially to offer, I'm just putting this out there as a thought, we could offer the 3.5% to non-unionized employees, knowing that this is happening for unionized employees with no step, and that would offer recognition perhaps to what is going on in within the airport finances and within the exterior world right now.
Yeah, that's what we're recommending. Exactly that.
Yeah. I have another question, Tony, if I may. Bob, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
That question would be, suppose the 3.5 moves between now and sometime during the year that we have no control over. Suppose it becomes 4% because of the governor's office decides it should be 4%. Would we then, I would hope, sort of reconvene in order to be able to continue to match or not to let our unorganized labor pool fall behind, you know, the ones who are working mostly all the time fall behind what the organized group would be, or would we be stuck with this 3.5% no matter what?
I think you could revisit compensation levels anytime throughout the year, but I do think it's unlikely that number is going to change on a state level, because that is the negotiated number. That's in their collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated.
Well, I think it's unlikely also, but this year has been a very unlikely year, and all kinds of weird things have happened. But as long as we have that flexibility, then I think, you know, sure, we stay the course.
Kevin, by putting this item on today's agenda, obviously the first objective is to vet the situation and the ideas of the committee members with respect to how it's handled. What further action, if any, do we need to take beyond the conversation we've had?
You really don't need to take any action, because as part of the budget process, the board in total has actually approved the potential for up to 6.5% increases, right? So it's more, you know, we typically do come to the Human Resources Committee just to see, is there a different direction that you would recommend when it is time to award the increases. So long as, you know, you're okay with the direction that we're going in, that if the state grants the raises, we will grant the raises. There really is no further action that you need to take.
All right, so yeah. I guess the question, go ahead, Tony.
Thank you. The Kevin, you mentioned that the governor is trying to, and I believe I read that somewhere, to work with the unions here in search of some sort of a compromise, perhaps. If the governor is able to talk the unions into maybe a 2%, can we base our decision on following suit?
Yes, that would be an easy thing to do, right? We're going to be tracking this. They're entitled to that increase effective July 1st, which you know is right around the corner. So we will probably know within a matter of a week or two whether or not that's going through, that it's going through at the same level. But if there's an adjustment there, yes, we can make that adjustment, and I would recommend that.
And what happens if the unions were to consider no increase or agree to no increase this year? Would that be palatable? Look, I'm asking these questions in part because we have excellent employees. We have a well-run airport. I'm not looking to be a pain in the ass here, but I will tell you right now, this state has a huge unemployment problem. And I'm seeing now, just beginning to see, small businesses closed right, left, and center, because there's just no money. There's no business, and quite frankly, there won't be any business until people regain confidence in our system, and confidence that when they go out to eat or go wherever, that they're going to be safe. So, if there's no increase, I guess is my question: would we still follow that pattern?
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what the state does, we're looking to implement the same thing here for the unclassified. So if the state somehow was able to reach an understanding with the unions that there was no increase, the recommendation here would be that we not grant an increase.
So just one last follow-up to that then. Would we be willing to write a letter of support to the governor to support him in his negotiations with the unions? Let me qualify that a little more. Look, we've been going to the legislature trying to get them to agree to cut us free from the regulations there. I'm thinking that this might be an opportunity to show how ludicrous this system is, and by supporting the governor's efforts here, maybe we gain an ally in that process. And we're not like the state in many respects. We can't just go out and raise taxes. Our income is based on business, and business is down, or was at least 90%. No company on this earth would give a pay raise under those circumstances. But as everybody said, we're on the hook here.
Yeah, I mean, so, we already have a call into the chief of staff for the governor's office to discuss our overall financial situation here at the airport, and some of the things that we're going to have to be talking about if there's a special session, and some of the things we're going to have to talk about the next legislative session. So I can certainly, you know, express the sentiment of the committee, if that's the committee's sentiment, that you're supportive of the governor's efforts to withhold a salary increase. But again, we have a number of issues we want to discuss with the governor's office.
I think it's better to do it in a discussion than in a letter.
Why, Bob?
Because our letter would be seen by legislators sooner or later, which might support our arguments, but it would also be something that the employee groups would focus on CAA and say, we're trying to create problems. And I wouldn't think, you know, I would defer to Kevin on that, but I wouldn't think we would want to stir them up at a time when the governor is, as I said earlier, representing the entire body of state employment in trying to negotiate with the unions. And the press reports indicate, as of the last 24 hours, that the governor does not expect the unions to agree to any reduction, that's where we are. So for us to come in now after the fact, if that's what it is, I think becomes kind of sensitive. But that's just my thought.
You're probably right. You are right.
Well, I think we have a consensus. The simplest expression of which came from Kevin, that our intent is to do whatever the state does for our unclassified employees, knowing that the classified employees will be part of whatever the state does. So do we need any further discussion on it? If things change, obviously Kevin will get back to the committee.
Absolutely. I'm all set.
Okay, great. So let's move on to the...
Okay, the next item we have on the agenda, we wanted to just quickly brief you on some of the initiatives we're taking, not only for the protection of the workforce here as it relates to the pandemic, but some of the preparations we put in place and are putting in place as we start to see a gradual return of passengers here at the airport. So I'm going to turn it quickly over to Sharon, who's just going to run through a very quick overview of what we've done.
I think that you probably know in March we brought in an organizational-wide program to keep the employees up to date on what was happening with guidance from CDC and Department of Health. There are a number of measures we took in those early days. We instantly started working on a teleworking program, which we did not have before the pandemic. And that telework program has been working quite effectively. It's actually running through the end of this month, June 30th. And what we will do then is we're working now on what we're calling a ramp-up plan to bring employees back. Under the telework program, we left it to each department to figure out which schedule worked best for them. But in general, most employees are working 1 or 2 days a week. And as I say, that has been quite effective. In terms of what we provided employees in those early days, it was really a communication effort. We made sure that they had all the guidance from CDC and from the Department of Health. We gave everybody disinfecting wipes. We, increased the cleaning in the employee areas. And so we're still doing that today. We've still got supplemental cleaning going on. We've also given employees that are in the office, we've given them supplies so that at the end of their shifts, they're cleaning. We're out there making sure everybody is social distancing. Every employee has been issued a mask, and they've got guidelines for how to wear their masks and what we expect in terms of them working here in the workplace. And as I said, we've also determined a new schedule a new policy in terms of travel, meeting with people, and even down to the vehicles, how people are going out to work sites. We've actually said they need to only be one person in a vehicle versus two. So those policies are in place. In terms of the ramp up operations, as I said, we're working through June 30th. We've actually started to assess all of the facilities, and we've looked at all of the office areas, including the cubicles. We've made some adjustments to work areas so that we just have people working in cubicles next to each other. And we've actually made some modifications to work areas, putting panels up, putting plexiglass up so that people are comfortable to work. We're keeping closed our break rooms is another example. We're encouraging people not to use the break rooms. We've got the fitness center is closed. We've actually tasked the managers with working on a schedule post June 30th. To bring back 50% of the workforce. So that is ongoing. And when people do come back, we'll be instituting some protocols in terms of temperature checking, making sure spot checks that the guys who are working out in the field are still doing the social distancing and that they're understanding what protocols we have in place.
So, questions on any of that we can answer?
That sounds good.
I'll just make a comment, I'm sure for all of us, that while one can never be certain about in situations like this, the fact that we've suffered not more than the one death and the number of infections certainly seems to be within the lower end of numbers that might have hit us, that would indicate that the authorities' program has been effective, and that we all can take satisfaction from that in terms of doing our best to protect the employees and the organization. Sharon, just a question with regard to the masks that we're issuing.
Can you tell us a little more what type they are?
We actually have a series of masks. So if you talk to what we have, obviously the paramedics and the fire department, they have the N95 masks and then they have the medical masks. For those first responders, they are responding to anything that happens in the terminal, anybody coming in on a plane. So they have the top grade masks. Each employee was given a fabric mask. We actually did manage to get hold of fabric masks. We had actually employees making masks. And so everybody was issued a mask. And then we were able to actually get a large volume of just the disposable masks, which are available. We have ample supply and people are using them primarily in the maintenance department, where they're out doing grass cutting or they're working around dust. And so we do have enough masks on hand. So we've got a combination. We actually do have some employees that are actually wearing our Bradley bandanas. We have a large stock of bandanas here in our promotional materials, and some of the guys prefer to wear those. So the Bradley bandanas are out there, but we have made it clear to all of the employees that if you need a mask, we have them. And we've made sure that they're inventoried. We do have a program that's managed by Jim Campbell with all of the masks are inventoried. And so we know what we have on hand. And it's been actually quite successful. In those early days, we were quite concerned, like everybody else, were we even going to be able to get a lot of these supplies, even the same with hand sanitizer. And we worked quite aggressively with our suppliers, and we had a number of staff working continually to make sure that we got everything we needed, and we have a good supply now and comfortable, even down to if we wanted to go into the terminal and passengers, if somebody comes in without a mask, can we take care of that? Yes, we can. So I'm comfortable with what we've done, and I think the programs we've put in place, is a lot of people that have been very, very committed to this, and they're out doing checks, they're making sure that their employees are wearing their masks and they understand the guidance. So I think the program here has been very, very successful.
I just want to share with everybody a personal concern that I have. When you are out in public places or potentially walking through Bradley, and you see a person with a KN95 or N95 type mask that has a filter on it, that it isn't well understood, I think, publicly, that's actually counterproductive, from the standpoint that yes, the person wearing the mask, that type of mask, is protecting himself, but he is not protecting other people, because it's not a filter actually. It's a way of discharging the individual's breath, which does not protect other people. So I just leave that with you, to the extent that it's not something that's really struck you at the airport or, the members of the committee, that, I would argue that anyone who's using that type of mask may not intentionally be doing it, but they're being socially irresponsible. So they're only taking care of themselves. Well, that was an exciting observation.
So I don't know if there were any other questions we could answer for you on any of the things that we're doing at the airport.
Okay. Well, hopefully things will start to ease off in some ways, but we all know what the unknowns are. All right, thank you for that report. And I think at this point we're ready to go into executive session to deal with the item we have on the agenda for that session. Can we have a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Seconded?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And Bob, I have until about 3 o'clock, and I've got a call that's been coming in, and I've got about 15 more minutes.
Great. This should be very short. Okay, so we are ready to move into executive session. You manage that.
Who's going to be in executive session? And we still have caller 01 on here. I don't know who that is. If we're going into executive session, I'm not sure if you have the capacity through the system to, sometimes you have to be able to allow people into the meeting, or that could just be this general abilities of your system, Kevin, to get you guys on. But I just want to make note of that.
Yeah, we're going to keep all of the staff for the executive session, and we'll lock the room to just the staff and the board members. So I just need to give Alex a minute to do that, and I can let you know.
Yeah, for the caller who's on the line, if you are a member of the public calling in, you will be ejected for executive session, but you can call back into the meeting using the same number you originally used. You'll be put into a waiting room, and then you'll be added back into the meeting once the board comes out. So you will be ejected now, the room will be locked, but you can still come back after executive session by calling back in.
That's very clear.
This conference will now be recorded.
Oh, got to remember that. Sorry.
So we are now back in public session. We have completed our entire agenda, and it would be timely to hear Mr. Long's motion.
I'd like to move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Don't hear any. So we are adjourned. Thank you all very much. And hope you have a good rest of the week.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.